sensitivity. We all know people. Some people are really, really sensitive. Other people, well, you know, let's just say Chrissy's called me a cad how many times now?
I've never used the word cad, but I realized yesterday I did say to you both, I hate you guys, which is mean. Shouldn't use the word hate.
Was that meaning really that you were oversensitive and we were less sensitive?
Yeah.
Or were we?
You guys were so insensitive yesterday when we were talking about Sofia Coppola. I said, I hate you guys.
Why did you say
which
that?
Which is not sensitive of me.
So you're the insensitive one.
Definitely. I told you.
Okay.
Peace warrior lady. Call me out for being angry.
Okay. Well, we'll focus on that, Chrissy. Let's focus on that. But let's talk about sensitivity because there maybe is a biological explanation for this. And joining me to help explain is Mike Jauer. He's been investigating the mind-body basis of personality and health for the past 20 years. And this article is called Sensitivity on a Spectrum, How Individual Differences Relate to Health. Mike, thanks for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Ethan, how are you?
I'm well, and although I'm always sleep deprived, so I'm not sure how that's affecting my serotonin, but that's called having children and dogs. I know I'm not the only one because every parent I talk to says, yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. Does sleep affect my serotonin levels, or is it my genetics that affect my serotonin levels?
Well, undoubtedly both, and I'm a parent of two and two dogs as well, so I'm right in the middle of that spectrum with you.
Oh, see, look at this. See, we can relate. I love that. As human beings, we always want to connect with another, and we start immediately with our sleep deprivation. Isn't that sad?
Well, being in the Washington, D.C. area, it is just endemic around here. So I'm not a good case example of how to get enough sleep, or you, it sounds like.
No, I definitely not. But that's okay. All right, well, let's talk about this because, you know, I've been hearing about serotonin for many, many years, right? A neurotransmitter. We talk about our synapses and the serotonin in between and the reuptake levels. And tell me about it. You tell me professionally, what is serotonin? Why do I care? And how does that affect my sensitivity? That was a lot in one, so let's break it down.
Right. So I don't want to indicate that serotonin is the only benchmark for personality, but it certainly has a role to play. It's actually manufactured. I believe 95% of serotonin is manufactured in the gut. So when you get gut feelings or gut instincts, if something is right or wrong, it's actually it's called the enteric nervous system, the mind of the gut. There's a lot going on down there, and the brain is sort of alerted to what's going on through serotonin, and that's how you perceive certain things. And what's interesting is there is something called the serotonin transporter gene, which has been found to make some people more sensitive to their emotional environment than others, and it also predisposes them to anxiety disorders such as depression, PTSD, irritable bowel syndrome, sort of physical manifestations of anxiety and worry. The really interesting thing about the serotonin transporter gene is there are two versions. People with the short version are these more sensitive types, but they're also sensitive to more positive information in the environment as well. It's a greater sensitivity to all experience, and the implications are pretty significant. Obviously, environment comes into play. People like this have been called orchids. Orchids will bloom spectacularly if they're taken really good care of. And so if you cultivate them, you know, they're marvelous, marvelous plants. You show them off, et cetera. So a person with the short version of the gene who is properly cultivated can thrive in certain circumstances. In other circumstances, they're gonna suffer. And this is where the environment comes into play.
So I think this is really important. Now, when you explain all of that to me, Mike Jauer is joining me on the phone, and we're talking about what causes a person to be more sensitive or less sensitive. He's been studying the mind-body basis of personality and health for over 20 years. When you say all of this, you're not just making this up. You're referencing actual scientific material, because I throw that in there because sometimes people will hear us talking, Mike, and they're like, yeah, these guys are just, you know, throwing out whatever. No, there's science behind this.
There's a great deal of science. There's more every day. And, folks like I am located in the Washington, D.C. area, we're known for making things up all the time.
Yeah, I'm
passing it off as truth.
True.
But in my case, no, I'm actually not making it up, nor am I, trying to present one side of the coin. You talk about mind and body, and they're really two sides of the coin. And that's what my research really focuses on, the unity of mind and body. And I'm really not interested in sort of narrowing personality to, you know, to one gene or to one characteristic or to nature or nurture, they really all come into play, and mind and body are really best looked at as unified in how people behave in the world and how they perceive things.
Well, I want to kind of riff off of that then for just a second, Mike, because, you know, nature versus nurture, the reason why I'm going to go with you on this one for a second and why that's not all that valid of a debate, because as we have seen, generally, typically not in kind of Western medicine necessarily, but when we as individuals make an effort to create change in our own lives, our own personality, our own function, we're able to do that. So nature versus nurture becomes a moot discussion if I have influence over that through my own exercise, whatever that exercise might be, whether it's diet, whether it's meditation, whether it's physical exercise. If I'm able to change myself through those, nature versus nurture doesn't matter, other than maybe I'm, you know, my height between, you know, because nature gave me this much and then nurture did that, you know, to make me my current height. But in terms of my personality, there is ability to change it, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Positively. That's why mindfulness meditation and yoga and biofeedback and all kinds of complementary and integrative treatments are really coming into their own, because people realize that it's just not everybody starts off with, you know, with the same equipment, so to speak.
Right.
You know, you can have somebody who's extremely extroverted, let's say, and someone who's extremely introverted. It doesn't mean that they can't shift that characteristic, but they're starting off from different places.
Right. And then that's why all of this knowledge that you're acquiring and writing about extensively in places like Psychology Today, among many others, that's the whole point, though, is so we, and I know this is, I'm just going elsewhere here, but that's fine. We have control. And when we choose not to have control, then we're limited by this nature versus nurture. This is how everybody else gets to define you and who you are and how you behave and what you're capable of. But if we choose otherwise and we find some of these tools that are fully available in the world, we are able to make those changes through exactly what you just talked about, whether it's yoga, whether it's meditation or whatever those are, we can create other versions of ourselves to be a better version of whatever that it means to us.
That's absolutely right. And one of the tools that I'm most excited about and sort of fondest of in my research is a personality characteristic called boundaries. And it's a measure of how much gets to someone and how they handle it. You know, how much emotional stimuli, you know, they process and in what way. And there are very definite distinctions in how people handle stimuli of all kinds and how they recognize what they're feeling or they don't. They're kind of oblivious to it. People differ in this characteristic as well as pretty much everything else. Like, you know, people may be familiar with the Myers-Briggs type. You know, this is somewhat similar along a spectrum. People differ along a spectrum from what you call highly thick boundary people to highly thin boundary people. And what our research is showing is that depending on where somebody is along this boundary spectrum, there's very likely a connection between their emotional processing style, their emotional type, we call it, and the types of chronic illnesses, many of which are aggravated by emotion, you know, that they're susceptible to. And the corollary is the kinds of integrative treatments that will help them may also vary and be appropriate for different personality types along this boundary spectrum.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. So, all right. So hang on a second. So Mike Jauer is joining me on the phone. This boundary spectrum, where would I go? So if I'm listening to us right now, right, Mike, where would I go to learn more about this boundary spectrum? This is fascinating. There's a lot to this.
Yeah, there's a fun quiz that my co-author and I have developed, which you can get to at www.youremotionaltype.com. And the quiz has been distilled from 154 question survey that was developed by the late Dr. Ernest Hartman from Tufts University. And he was actually a dream researcher and a fascinating guy and someone I got to know pretty well. And he was interested initially in nightmares and the types of people that would report nightmares. And he ended up calling them thin boundary people. In other words, their anxiety and their sort of focus on negative stimuli actually would wake them up in the middle of the night. And he realized that there was a big contrast between these folks and other folks who couldn't even remember their dreams, or if they could remember their dreams, they were kind of dull and prosaic and in black and white versus these very vivid nightmares. So he eventually came up with this concept of boundaries, thick to thin, and the boundary questionnaire has been around since the 1990s. About 5,000 people have taken it. It's been the subject of hundreds of papers. But what we did with Dr. Hartman was distill it down to an 18-question quiz, which takes about 10 minutes to check out, and it always provides insight that people seem to be very pleased with. It seems to reflect them pretty well, and it does give an indication as to, in our estimation, what kinds of health problems they may be candidates for.
Okay, so here's what I want to do. So it's youremotionaltype.com, and there's the link there to boundaries, find your boundary type. I'm going to do this, Mike, and I want to invite you back because I want to discuss what this means, you know, how we can analyze this. And this is absolutely fascinating to me. Mike Jauer, we were talking about sensitivity and boundary types. Again, it is youremotionaltype.com. Mike, thanks for your time today, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ethan. Thank you.